I want to read just a little bit in the fourth chapter of the book of Job, and I'm not really going to try to preach to you tonight. It just come to me today to relate a few things to you, just talk heart to heart with you since it was a young folk service, and relate just a few things, just typical things to try to help you to understand the seriousness of where we're at and what we're doing. In the fourth chapter of the book of Job, if you got your Bibles, turn and read with me. Let's start here at the seventh verse, the fourth chapter. Remember, I pray thee, whoever perished, being innocent. Now what he said here, somebody talking to him, Eliphaz here rebukes Job, and he said, remember, I pray thee. In other words, who is it that ever perished when they were innocent? Or where were the righteous cut off? Even as I have seen, they that plow iniquity and sow wickedness reap the same. By the blast of God they perish, and by the breath of his nostrils are they consumed. The roaring of the lion and the voice of the fierce lion, and the teeth of the young lions are broken. The old lion perisheth for lack of prey, and the stout lion whelps are scattered abroad. Now, a thing was secretly brought to me. Mine ear received a little thereof in thoughts from the visions of the night. When deep sleep falleth on men, fear came upon me, and trembling, which made all my bones to shake. Then a spirit passed before my face. The hair of my flesh stood up, it stood still, but I could not discern the form thereof. An image was before mine eyes. There was silence, and I heard a voice saying, shall mortal man be more just than God? Shall a man be more pure than his maker? Behold, he put no trust in his servants, and his angels he charged with folly. How much less in them that dwell in houses of clay, whose foundation is in the dust, which are crushed before the moth. They are destroyed from morning to evening. They perish forever without any regarding it. Doth not their excellency which is in them go away? They die without wisdom. Now you know, the Lord here says to Job, if God didn't put any trust, you didn't have any trust in the angels, how much less confidence or trust would God have in humanity or them that dwell in houses of clay? If he couldn't trust the angels, how much confidence would he put in them that live in houses of clay? You know, that alone would make you to know that we're saved by the grace of God. Isn't that right? I read that to you to stir you up just a little bit so that I could relate a few things to you tonight and try to get into the thoughts of the Lord just for a few minutes if we can, that I might bring you up to date on one or two things, if you can call it that. I'm thankful. I've said this a number of times tonight, but I'm so grateful. I'm so thankful to be able to have a part in what is taking place. I'm grateful. I'm so thankful from the bottom of my heart. In the hours of the night, in the hours of the morning, I roll off of my bed and I get out on my knees and I tell God how grateful, how thankful I am that he would consider me and help me to be able to understand enough to help you. You know, there's a real God. As long as we're in a superficial condition, we can't touch that God. We can't see that God, and we can't understand that God. But when we get sincere, now folks, if you can listen and understand what I'm saying tonight, it'll really do you some good. It'll really help you. Most of you, as a rule, and you'll admit it, if you're honest, most of you as a rule can't hardly feel the Spirit of God. And when you do feel God, you feel just a little silt, like a man that's just perishing to death for water, and he gets just a little taste. And that encourages you to keep on going on, because you say, I'm gone, I'm gone, I'm gone. And then all of a sudden you get so grave that you get sincere at last and get out of that superficial life that you're living. And then, of course, you make contact with him and you feel a little sip and say, oh, glory to God, he's still here. So then you go on careless for another month. You understand what I'm saying? You think, well, I thought he was gone, but after all of that, he's still here. So you get bold again, you get careless again, you get unconcerned again, and you go on again. But someday he won't be there. Now you watch what I'm telling you. Someday he won't be there. The Bible said, my spirit shall not always strive with man. He's there working with you and wooing you and talking to you, trying to indoctrinate you and trying to develop you and trying to bring you into a real life with him. But one day he won't be there. Now, the better thing for you to do is if you can make contact with God, get down there and make your calling and election sure. Get down to business about it. Mean business with God. Get down there and talk to God and say, Lord, help me. Help me to shake myself and get out of this condition. Help me to wake up, God, before it's too late. While you're still with me, while there's still grace, while there's still mercy, while God is still moving. See, and then you get sincere. The reason you don't feel God but just a little sip at a time is because you're so insincere. A person doesn't realize how insincere they are. I've said this a number of times. You think about death, you see movies, you see television shows and all these things, but the reality of death still doesn't dawn on you. You read the paper about somebody getting killed, it still don't dawn on you. Once in a while you might hear about a little child that fell in a well and they couldn't get to it, and they carry it for a week or two, and finally you get into the stream of it and you get sincere and you get to thinking about the little fellow. Might even shed a tear. But as a whole, you're so insincere. But when one of your loved ones, for instance, you might go in the middle of the morning. I've done this. Used to work at a funeral home. Go in the middle of the morning when all of the lights are out, roll down the streets, everybody's sleeping. Go into a home there and everybody's up running around in their nightgowns and everything else, and crying and hollering and screaming, and you go in there and you say, what's wrong? And they say, Mama's dead, Mama's dead, Daddy's dead, we found them dead in the bed. They're dead. Woke up to get a glass of water, and we found little Junior dead, little Sissy dead, and they're just going all to pieces. Then, brothers and sisters, it dawns on you what death is. The reality of it dawns on you because your little baby, your little Susie, your little Jonathan, your little Joe, your little Bill, your little John, your little Jack, whoever he is, it suddenly dawns on you what death is. You come into reality, and then when you do, you stand there and you think, Lord, how superficial life is. How superficial, how hypocritical I've been. The reality of death. Now, folks, believe it or not, that's exactly the way that people serve God. There is no reality to their faith in God. There's no real contact between them and God. The church world goes on to parties and ball games and everything that they want to do, and there's no reality there. It's just a daily ritualistic, a practice, a formality of hearing the preacher tell them about the Bible. And that's all there is to it. Them kind of people will never get into the revelation of Christ. They'll never get into the Spirit. It takes a sincere heart and a sincere mind and a sincere spirit to ever get into the revelation of Christ. It takes a reality and serving God to be able to get God to talk with you. Now, I'm telling you the truth. A lot of people say, well, bless God, I hadn't fasted 30 days, and I know God will never speak to me. You can fast 30 days and be one of those carnal people they are. That don't have anything to do with it. God is wanting a sincerity. A sincerity. I remember how God spoke to me years ago and said, son, be sincere with me. And he said, my people are not sincere. I remember where he spoke to me when he told me in LaGrange, Georgia, many years ago, I've been seeking God. And I never understood and never knew that the angel of God came to Brother Branham and said the very same thing to him. Said, if you will be sincere. See, there's a lot to it, Brother Bill. A lot of people say, well, Brother Pike, they're sincere over there when they throw their children to the crocodiles. But that don't bring God in. I know that. But I'll tell you what, those people that are that sincere, if they knew about God, they'd walk rings around you. I said, with the kind of sincerity they got and the self-denial they got and the perseverance they got, while the church world today couldn't even touch them. That's why the Jews were so powerful. The Jews would deny themselves. There was a reality in serving God. You get 5 or 6 days under your belt line, you ain't had no food, and your belly growling, headaches, and you can't sleep at night. Then serving God becomes a reality. You get down on your knees and you stay 4 or 5 hours in the night rolling and groaning and moaning and talking to God when you don't even feel like it. Then your experience with God becomes a reality. You go through things, experiences like Job did when the sores break out on you and you have to get something like you curl a mule with and begin to scrape the scabs off of you. Then serving God becomes a reality. When you get a cross, it becomes a reality. As long as you're eating steak and chicken and drinking and frolicking, going here and there, making money, that's not a reality in serving God. That's not the church. But like when they took them in the dark ages and they took them out there, and they fed them to the lions and they just mutilated their bodies and done all kind of evil things to them. Serving God became a reality, my brother. This thing is a reality to God. He come down here and he tabernacled in human flesh. And he took the nails in his hands and he took the thorns on his head and he took the whip on his back till it cut down to the bone. He went hungry and he wandered around and stayed in the cold and slept on the ground and everywhere else in a cave. It was a reality to him. Until the church comes into a reality with God, they'll never get the revelation of Jesus Christ. It takes a reality. I thank God for the reality of God, Brother Hollis, and being on the field all those many years when your little children sleep in the back of the trunks or you're stranding in the mountain or you don't have anything to eat or people curse you. And life becomes a reality. It becomes a reality. Them little fellas in India, the flesh sticking to the bones, the mothers watching them breathe their last breath because of starvation. Life is a reality to them people. It's not a drama. It's not a stage of superficial acting like it is here in this United States that's overrun with the best of stuff to eat. I've heard people here in the United States say, I'm having a hard time. You don't know what a hard time is. You people that sleep in a barn, you got it better than they've got it in India. I've seen pictures over there, some of them. I remember especially something that just rent my heart. I've related it to some of you. That at night, a little boy that was like these two little boys here of Mitch's, one just about that size, a little bigger, and the other a little bitty feller. And I saw the pictures where at night, this little one, that was supposed to be a big one, would take the arm of the little one and go out on the sidewalk and find a piece of pasteboard or whatever he could find and cover him up with it and lay down there and sleep till the morning to get up and try to figure out where to get a nibble of anything. I'll tell you what, some of you almost make me sick talking about hard times. I'll tell you what, you talk about hard times, you don't know what hard times is. You eat, you sleep, you're fat and plump just like I am right here. Your children walk around fat and plump, got plenty to eat. Somebody said, my children don't get enough to eat. Your children get enough to eat if it didn't do nothing. You never did feed them, it'd be overfed. Just wandering from house to house and going here and there and wherever they go. They could find enough in the garbage cans to keep them fat in America. You ain't got no hard times. Folks, forgive me, I'm not getting upset at you. I think about the way that we do. Superficial. Come to church and everything is superficial to us. We don't really get down to business and really serve God. We spend our time gossiping, backbiting, all these kind of things. Old Brother Job was having a hard time. I mean, he's having it rough. It was rough. Job was carrying a cross. But even with what Job was going through with, God came down there and reproved him to his face, and just in as much as say, Job, you don't know what suffering is. You ought to go by the way of Calvary, Job. You ought to wade through the chambers of hell and feel the flames biting at you the way that I've had to do when I tabernacled in a human body. You understand what I'm saying? The foreknowledge of God showing the sufferings of Christ in a like measure through Job. In other words, he said, Job, can a man be more righteous than God? Do you mean your complaints, they're justified in my sight, your sufferings? Job decided he hadn't went through nothing. Job said, I went off into a sleep and said, I felt something come over me that caused me to tremble. And said, then I looked out there and God showed me a reality. He said, and when the reality of serving God come, I shook and I trembled. I tell you something tonight, folks. You believe what Brother Pike is telling you, as I live before the God that I serve, you're going to shake and you're going to tremble. The reality of God's going to come to your home, and the reality of serving Christ is going to come to your house, and you're literally going to shake and you're going to tremble. Somebody said, Brother Pike, I'll never do it. You'll do it as I live before God. You'll do it. You're going to shake and tremble. I made the statement the other day. Down here, I asked the people not to gossip. I asked them not to backbite. They got settled down. Everything was going pretty good. God sent a tornado through here and he ripped up the trailers and turned them over. Now loved ones was down there in the night up under bedsteads and vanities and up under refrigerators and groaning and hollering and everything and just a turmoil. It's just like a nightmare. Because they'd been grumbling and mumbling and fussing and gossiping and got God upset and the devil come through and like to tore everything up. Over in Olive Branch, it got to mumbling and complaining and gossiping and going on and tail bearing and a siege of death come through there and kill I don't know how many people. And brother, they shook and they trembled and come to reality of serving God. There's a tribulation period that's coming that's going to bring the world to reality. The Bible said that there will be hail that will come out of the heavens, the weight of a talent. And men will be so bitter they'll blaspheme the name of God. And they'll curse God and wish that they could die. Men will cry for the rocks and mountains of all of them. You're not far from it. You're not far from it. They're a reality of coming into something that you know that's not superficial. Folks have started to mumbling and grumbling again. The first news you know, some could. Great calamity will befall the campground or some of you again if you keep on or your loved ones. You got to stop it. God's going to get you. You don't have to be on the campground. You might be off the campground. Things has happened to some of them off the campground. You might be in a route somewhere. Get your mind straight. Get your mind straight. Meditate on the laws of God. Get your thoughts straight. Bring every thought into subjection to Jesus. Stop thinking the wrong thoughts. You'll get God upset. Somebody said, well, I ain't said nothing. You don't have to say anything. You just think the wrong thing and God will get upset about it. The Bible said, out of your evil heart comes adulterous thoughts. And evil thoughts that defile the temple of God. He said, it's from your heart these thoughts come. These defile a man, Jesus said. The thoughts. To bring every thought into subjection to the obedience of Jesus Christ, meditating in his laws day and night. Get your mind, yield that spirit. Break that spirit. Somebody said, bless God, I ain't. You can't because you're already twofold more the child of hell than you was before I preached to you. I said, some people are twofold more the child of hell than he was from the first sermon that I ever preached to them because they know more about it and they ain't done nothing. God is a spirit. I said the other night, God is a spirit. Job said, I saw a spirit go out before me. I saw something before my eyes, he said. And he said, I couldn't make out what it was. He said, but the hair stood up on my arm. Some of you fellas need an experience to where the hair stand up on your arms. You get out of that old carnal way of living. And the things that you let run across your mind and infiltrate your mind. Somebody said, bless God, I just can't help it. Yes, you can help it. When God sends a quivering to your house, he sends a plague to your house, he sends an evil to your house, some dreaded sword to your house, some bad something to your house, then you'll come into reality. Then you'll stop. Then you'll think. They couldn't think down in Egypt. Pharaoh couldn't think. God said, Pharaoh, don't do it. Don't do it, Pharaoh. Over and over, God said, don't do it. But old Pharaoh, he just had to do it anyway. Till one time Moses stepped down there. And Moses said, this very night the death angel is coming through here. And when he comes through here, said, they won't be a home, but what, he don't kill somebody? And said, then you people are going to come to the reality of serving God and the reality of knowing there's a Christ. And brother, when the death angel struck and began to move through them houses over there, the Bible said there was weeping and wailing and bawling and crying. And old Pharaoh said, get out of here. The reality of serving God came to him, folks. Job said, I saw this thing, I saw it pass before me, said I couldn't make out what it was. He said, but I heard a voice. He said, I couldn't tell what form it was. He didn't know whether it was Jesus, Elijah, Peter, Paul, James, but it must have been the Lord. Said, I heard a voice. And so that voice said to me, shall mortal man be more just than God? My, what a rebuke, what a reproof. That all of these men reproved Job, and Job talked back to them. But then God himself came down. Did you know you need to listen to the preacher? When the preacher reproves you, when the preacher tells you something, when the preacher's trying to reach you, you need to listen to him. Or the first news you know, God will come down. Like in Sodom and Gomorrah, they wouldn't listen to Abraham, they wouldn't listen to Lot. And one day Christ came down. Rolled in humanity. And he walked down there and said, I'm going down there and see if this thing's as bad as I hear that it is. That it's come up in my ears. It's pretty bad. I expect old Lot done put it in God's ears. I expect Abraham done put it in God's ears. Abraham probably done said, Lord, it's bad down there. Old brother Lot's probably done said, Lord, I can't hardly stand it down here. So God came down in a body of humanity and said, I'm going down there. I'm going to find out what's going on down there. I'm going to walk down there and I'm going to find out if this report's true. I'm going to come see for myself. Folks, a lot of times if somebody just keeps on, maybe a person over here say, my neighbor, old brother so-and-so, sister so-and-so, I love them, God, but they're a thorn in my flesh. I can't reason with them no way. The next day, another neighbor over here says, you know, this person over here, they just don't regard me at all. They're not concerned about my things at all. I've heard even here on the campground that I ask some of you to please take care of your dogs and your chickens and your cats and your youngins and whatever you got and keep it on your own property. Love worketh no ill to its neighbor, but they're just scattered everywhere. They just go anywhere they want to, do anything they want to, wreck what they want to. Youngins just overrunning everything. You tell me you love God, you tell me that you're Christian, when the Bible said without charity, without love, you're nothing but a sounding brass and tinkling cymbal, and you work ill to your neighbor tells you about it, and you don't do nothing about it, and you tell me that's the love of God. I watch something when it happened between your neighbors, between the children, and lo and behold, if you don't get puffed up like a frog, let something go wrong and every man runs to his own house. Now, a person won't come out and take the word of God and say, now, wait a minute, my boy was in it or my girl was in it. And what I need to do is take the word of God and try to settle this thing and find out what's going on. But every man runs to his own little boy, his own little girl, and say, yes, bless God, they done this to my boy and they done this to my girl. And I know they're to blame because of such and such and such. And usually, as a rule, the whole scramble up mess was the devil and the daddies and the mothers to begin with. You can say amen on me because I'm going to preach it the same way anyway. Hallelujah. You can sit back there. That's all right. God will chop your block up one day. You just sit back there strong in spirit. Big hero, don't have to yield. Sit back there. God will chop you up one day. When he gets through with you, he won't get in the way of the righteous anymore. The Bible said, blessed is he that standeth not in the way of the sinners or sitteth in the seat of the scornful, whose delight is in the laws of God, in the laws of the Lord, and in God's spirit and word doth he meditate day and night. Be like a tree that's planted by the water. God will get you. He'll move you out of my way. You're a hindrance to me now, but he'll tear you out of the frame. I'm asking him to do it. I'm asking God. I'm saying, Lord, these people that get like a stump set right down in my way and won't yield their spirit, I want you to move them away from this church, move them out of this message, cut them off, and send them away from here. You say he'll never do it. He'll do it as I live. He'll do it. He's done it every time. He has to take them out one way or another. He'll get them out. Now listen, folks. There is a reality in serving the Lord Jesus. There is a way to judge righteous judgment. But to do that, you got to do like Abraham. You got to lay his son upon the altar. You got to get away from your flesh and blood. Get away from your own desire. Some of you can't get away from your own relatives. There ain't no way you can do it. You know why? Because you ain't never even got away from your own car or mine. Some of you haven't even got away from you yet. I can tell when you come into a service, you don't pray and seek God enough to even be spiritual. And Paul said, at least be spiritual. Now, what is it? There's a reality in serving God. There's something coming. I'm going to say this, just trying to leave you a thought or two here tonight. It's like my son David. My son David got rebellious the other day. Got all out of sorts. Wouldn't listen at me. But I'm going to show you something. A prophet's without honoring his own family. I'm not saying a prophet. I'm just speaking of what the Bible said. But David got out of sorts. I warned David. I told David. I said, don't do it, David. I said, you're going to get in trouble. But David got out of sorts. David talked back to me. David shrugged his shoulders, went on his way. But David wanted to go to the mountains this week. I finally consented to let him go. I could see something in it. I said, I'll let you go, David. So I said, goodbye, David. But that wasn't good enough for David. David went off and he come back, and he went off and he come back. And I knew something was eating on him, you know. And finally, he said, well, I'm leaving, Daddy. I said, I come up here in Brother Frank's office. I'm leaving, Daddy. I said, okay, goodbye, David. Be careful. He stood there and finally come over and put his arms around me. He said, Daddy, I'm fixing to go. Kiss me. So you know what it was? David wanted my blessings before he left. You know why David wanted my blessing before he left? Because he knows that I try to tell him the truth, that I do love God. He lives around me, and though he might get mad enough to spit in my face, he knows God is going to honor my words as sure as this world is standing. And David, Paul didn't want to go without that blessing. I know that's true. I got George Jr. I believe Jr. is about as rowdy as anybody I've ever seen, and about as ornery when he gets upset. You can't hardly do nothing with him. Won't listen to nobody. But when he gets upset, he'll come back. He put his arms around me and say, Daddy, I'm leaving. If he happens to get mad and goes off, it won't be but a little while. He'll come back around, try to make it right. But folks, some of you ain't got enough understanding yet in the Lord to know better than to do what you're doing. But you're going to have enough understanding. It's coming down your way. You watch what I'm telling you. You're going to have enough understanding. It's like a brother that stood out here and told me, made a statement to me, said, I've stood before you when you said nobody wouldn't. I said, no, you're not at the end of it yet. And the same brother last night stood and yielded and accepted and said it was right and it was greater than that which he had trusted in. Brother Gary, is that right? You was out there last night. Is that right? He said it's greater. He accepted it and said, I know where I'm born. I know where I'm from. I might wander off and get blinded. That was the essence of what he said, not the words. But he said, I always find my way back. Folks, we're living in a sad time. I want to show you something right here. God has certain people to go to certain places to do certain things because it is an ordination of God. And even they themselves are blinded and don't understand it and wouldn't do it for nothing in the world. But God ordained it to be that way. Just like the Jews would never have nailed Jesus to the cross because the one thing they loved and longed for and looked for and lived for was the coming of the Messiah. But they nailed him to Calvary because they were blinded. A lot of good people have been blinded because God's doing something. But it's like a brother that I was talking to, Brother Tom Carnes. that just come and acknowledge this, spoke of it, come back to it, yielded up to it, and acknowledged that the moving of the revelation was far greater than what Brother Branham brought. After all the controversy and all the other. And we had a conversation that lasted all day just about it. And did you know that the brother realized that this is very God, that it is the moving of Christ, and that it is the last moving of Christ, and that something is taking place that nobody can withstand. Nobody. Now, I want to show you something tonight. Some of you probably don't remember the vision I told about when I started into a great wilderness. And a little brother run off ahead of me. And I had to scream at him before I could ever get him stopped because he was full of zeal. And I finally got him stopped right at the edge of the wilderness. How many of you remember that vision? And then I went through that wilderness and got on the other side. And when I got on the other side, I looked. And there was the great, I don't know what you call it, the bottomless pit, I guess it would be. Because I saw no end to the place. And we had come right upon the very brink of it. And I was looking for Brother Tom Carnes. I had every one of my followers, hadn't lost to one of them, except Tom, and Tom wasn't there. And I made the statement to some of the brethren here not too long ago. I said, I don't care where he goes and what he does. He's one of my children. He's born to this. He can do what he wants to, but he'll have to come back to this. And I said, and when he does come in, it has to do with the end of things. I'm going to show you something here. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says unto the church. Brother Tom, I stood there on the brinks of eternity, it appeared. And I said, where's Tom? I said, surely he must have got lost back in the wilderness and he'll catch up. I just couldn't make myself believe that he'd gotten ahead and fell off into this great gulf. I want to show you how perfectly God does things. Brother Tom was excited, was telling me about his trip to the Carolinas. Now, I've related some of this to you, and some of you understand it. But remember when he went to the Carolinas, he went to Brother Bobby Woodruff's place. Now, just a little present-day truth here. He went to Brother Bobby Woodruff's place. Bobby's represented the cross, Woodruff. Is that right? It was where the Brother Bobby and I was on the mountain and saw the you know, I spoke about the vision of the people and how that later three people was found dead when I spoke about the revelation. You understand what I'm saying? I won't go into all that, but some of you know what I'm talking about because it's on tape. The Episcopal meeting that we had, Brother Branham and all of them. Brother Tom had come back from Tucson and I spoke about his dad-in-law, Ezekiel, the Valley of Dry Bones, the dry desert, and what happened. Why Tom was getting all of Brother Branham's messages to bring it up to this and then close it out and change it over. How that Brother Borders had published the book on Revelation to pick it up from where the spoken word and bring it on over. And I even made the statement, I said, George Lickers has to do with it. I said, George Lickers, there's something good about the man in spite of the fact that I heard he'd said things against me. Whether he has or not, I don't know. But I said, he's still God's man. God's got his hands on him and there's something working in his life. Sure enough, I understand right now that Brother Borders, after having made the statement that the footprints of the sands of time was the highlight of his ministry, has started to go into over to George Lickers, and George Lickers is now preaching Revelation, and people are coming from everywhere to hear it, and that George Lickers withstood Lee Vail and all of them, and some of them got up and left. Has he come against the things that they've been teaching? And don't forget, it was George Lickers that married Joseph and the wife, just like we say, drunk off the Spirit, standing in between the Brother Branham message and this, using it, God using him like a tie in there because of his name, bringing the thing together in a, like a tie in this and in that, and he doesn't even know it yet. Brother Borders, the brink, there, swinging over after the highlight of his ministry, the sands of time. And Betty will tell you the song that I wrote when I come back and spoke about the sands of time and what it had to do with it. And as we got it, sent the little pencil up to Joseph. And Brother Tommy Carnes said he'd just come back from Joseph. And said he asked Joseph, said, Joseph, have you still got that pen that Brother Pike gave you? He said, yes, I still got it. Now, there's a lot to that, isn't it? Foolish and a base thing to the world to confound the wise. Brother Tommy, after having come out of the desert, and this will make a little more sense because I'm going to piece this together a little bit, where I'm just kind of jumping over that because I've brought it up in the past, and I won't take up a lot of time. But he went to the Carolinas. Now, it was at Calvary that Jesus went into prison, isn't it right? Joseph in the heart of the earth. You know the story. But here, Brother Tommy Carnes spent about 7 days, as I understood of him, in this place, taping off Brother Branham's message. And he said, in this place, it was behind bars. Brother Gary remembers, I don't remember who told me about it, but he remembers a vision concerning Brother Border or some of them. Whether it's behind bars, and Brother Branham was trying to get him out. And somebody said, a young man said, take more than that, whatever it was. Brother Tommy Carnes was behind these bars in a fulfillment of the church age, as they say, the dark age, the sleeping age from Pentecost over to the coming of the Protestant era. Which that is to say, from the fall of Brother Branham's time over until the lightning in this hour. There he was behind the bars. He taped the message. He had war with a man by the name of Fred Toms. They couldn't get along. Are you listening? Are you listening to me now? I'm not degrading anybody. God uses people. Not degrading Tom. God used Tom, not degrading brother, that is Tom one way or Tom another way. Carnes or Fred Toms. But they had a difference because of Tom's wife. Tom said that brother Fred Toms kept looking at his wife and he didn't like it. Now, Sister Sharon, you ever heard of the Rose of Sharon? Sister Sharon, Brother Ezekiel's her father, her dad. Fred Toms is a lawyer. Fred Toms, representing the law, kept his eyes on the Rose of Sharon. How many of you listen to what I'm saying? For the law tried its best to claim the church. Not that I say anything was wrong with Fred. God was just using him. But the war between Tom and Fred was on, and he told him how he felt. He said, I just want you to look at my wife like that. And that's the way Tom is, you know. Are you listening to what I'm saying? So Tom stayed behind there and said he didn't hardly have nothing to eat, to just made out, got him a little knick-knack. The law and the bondage behind the bars, trying to hold to the wife. And then, after getting all of the tapes and being disgruntled, finally, he said he looked. And there was another tape, and that tape was called the rending of the veil. Have you remember when I said that that started the things moving back yonder? So he decided he wanted to listen to the rending of the veil. He listened to the rending of the veil, and then he came out behind the bars. He went to Brother Fred Toms, the law again, and Brother Fred Toms told him, said, what you need to do is to come and sit under Lee Vail's teachings and learn what Lee Vail understands. I want you to see this now. All of a sudden, Brother Toms' heart got ahead of his head. And as the place of his nativity began to show. So he spoke to Brother Lee, or Brother Toms, the war with the law. Remember, he just listened to the rending of the veil. So he come over to the law, the veil, and he was ready to rend the veil because the law said, come to the veil. So Tommy just spoke up and made a statement in defense of what we're doing here. That there wasn't even a comparison, even as much as a candlelight with it. But he didn't refer back to Brother Branham's teaching. He referred back to the revelation. Why did he do that up there? The rending of the veil, Brother Bobby Woodruff. The cross of Calvary, where the three men was killed. I hope you understand what I'm saying. So Brother Tom, rent the veil, come back from the Mount of Four Seasons, come back, went over to Jeffersonville, Indiana, and stood down there at Jeff and began to preach Revelation to them. And all of a sudden, some of them pricked him in his heart, and he realized, you know, a lot of times you think a fella's an ugly duckling because he don't flap his wings the way you do. But a lot of times he might be a beautiful swan, like the little story said. You can't ever tell. Might be a graceful creature, having nothing to do with the law. So then they pricked him in his heart, and he left the spoken word. And don't forget, my wife was down at the spoken word when this thing came about the law, when we had the Utica Mike meeting, the changeover and them kind of things. And here he was down there, already having received the pen of Revelation, that is Brother Joseph. After that Tom was there, then the next day he went over to Joseph and he said, Joseph received him well. They had a conversation. And in our conversation, as we talked out here, I brought some things to Tom's remembrance as he talked. And one of them was that when Brother Branham had his wreck, ending the Billy Paul move of God, which was Brother Branham in the flesh, bringing on the son Joseph, which outshot him, and went to Billy Paul to boast about driving the last two tacks in, said to get Billy off of his back because Billy had been such a good shot. I suppose that's what it was. But anyway, Joseph was asked, do you have the pen? That sounds like a foolish thing, don't it? But that wasn't really what it was. In other words, Tom, after going down to the spoken word, was saying, Joseph, do you still have the revelation? For the pen said the revelation of Jesus Christ. Have you still got it? He said, I still got it. Billy Paul, the first woman, Joseph, the second woman, Brother Branham in travail in the wreck. Joseph had just got out of the car. And when they came to the wreck, Joseph didn't get out. Billy got out. And they said, somebody screamed. They said, who is it? Brother Branham said, who is it? He said, it's Joseph. Because the baby screamed when it's born, when it come to life. It was the travail of Brother Branham and Joseph coming in. And the woman died, that is, they said she was dead, officially dead. I made a statement she'd live according to what the Lord showed me. Brother Branham laid his hands on her, prayed for her, and said she'd come back to life. She revived. The travail, the child coming. How do you understand what I'm saying? Joseph screamed out, just got out of the car, the travail over, going over. There's a lot that we could say tonight about this, a whole lot. But I'm just going to jump over and say a few things and close. I just wanted to bring a few things up because I've kept you a long time. Now listen, just a few minutes. The change coming over from Jeff back to Indiana, Joseph coming in, and Billy Paul going out. Brother Branham's ministry was absolutely the closing out of the church ages and the Gentile church. It was beyond a shadow of a doubt. I tried to point this out to you to where you can see it. I made the statement that when Kennedy came in office, that it was over for the Protestant age, that was over, and in it would go 1, 2, 3, until it came over to about where we're at now, and then that would be the finishing of it. It is a true fact that even Brother Tom figured it up to see how it come out, and when it come out over at 74. He had to admit it when he finally got in on it. Now, the change, whereas Brother Branham preaches the message, we preach the revealing of the message. Brother Branham, the message in the veil until Brother Tom rented in the time. And now at Calvary, that is up in the mountain, Brother Bobby Woodrum. And then after that it's rent, then comes the revelation of Christ. Brother Tom was the last one I was looking for. And we got down to the brink of eternity. And sure enough, just before we talked to Tom, in comes Mr. Brink. The man's name, it was just here. His name is Brinks. And I thought about how precise God is. Not only that, but he talked about Hades all the time he was here. A very intellectual man. Maybe you don't understand what I'm saying. But I said, Hades is all right, but not Hades. He was talking about how hot it was over there. A little crossing over on the Brinks. And at the very time, here comes Brother Tom, right on the brink. And I made the statement to Brother Adley. I said, Adley, it scares me when I talk about the door to the vault, because I said the door to this vault, as foolish as it sounds, I said it has to do with the end of the world and the closing of the door to the Gentile people. I said, that's why Tom come in here the very day we come up here to start on it. I said, here's Tom here, because Tom come in on the brinks. Or I was looking for him on the brinks. Here are the doors going up in a threefold manner, three parts. At last, the three divisional parts of humanity coming together in one to close the door to the Gentile people, the body, soul, and spirit group of people that's been divided down through life. Out in the world, they'll come together. In a confederation in the church, they'll come together. As long as it's dissected from Calvary, it means open door, body, soul, spirit. The people divided into three groups. But when they come together, it means all one nation becoming the head of the nation. One God, Jesus Christ, not a Trinity teaching. That'll be over. The veil will be over. The door is open as long as there's a Trinitarian teaching. Because it means the body of Christ is dissected. That the body groups wise is split up in the earth. But when they come together, it means the door to the Gentiles closed. The door in heaven. And Brother Atlee is already working on it. He's got the first part of the door almost ready to put together and to hang up in there. Now you say, Brother Pike, you crazy. I know it. I know it. I'm beside myself. I'm beside myself for Christ. I'm crazy as far as the world's concerned. I'm crazy as far as philosophy's concerned. I've always been crazy as far as they're concerned, but it's still the truth anyway. Even if you want to take it from a crazy man, if you want to look at it like that. Sometimes a crazy man makes sense, don't he? It means the closing of the door to the Gentile people. It means it's over. Brother Branham's ministry was the finishing up of it. When Kennedy went out, that meant it was the end. That's why I said the other night, when I spoke of the eagle flying away, the rapture of the church, the independency of the dollar on the back. Like we was talking the other night, 37 kings allotted to Israel, 37 kings down the line. And we made a comparison to it on the tape here a few years ago. And they say now that forward is exactly 37 of them. And after that, what was it? Upon this rock, Rockefeller. In other words, we said the king coming in, they found out his name was King. And you say, what are you trying to say? I can't say what I'd like to say because it would take too long. But what I'm trying to tell you is I'm speaking of a reality in serving God. A present day truth, understanding, coming to the mind of God, seeing what's happening, to know the hour where we're living, not children of darkness but of light, that the day should not come upon us unaware. It can catch us unaware. Because the Bible said as a snare it shall come upon all of them that dwell on the earth. If you are children of light, it won't catch you unaware. But you're going to have to wake up. Because if it don't, you'll sit right here in this church or on the campground and it'll still catch you unaware. You're going to have to wake up. When they awoke, they saw His glory. The glory of God's moving. And some of you can't see it at all. But as foolish as it seems, Brother Branham's ministry going out at this point, it's been moving toward it. David Terrell, Brother Branham, a type of David of old, and David Terrell moving in and that ministry closing out. Brother Terrell, closing out, and like Brother Delmer said, anointed to represent the beginning of the new and in New Mexico. And Brother Delmer said, God showed him when the man started wearing white, it meant the new. Is that right? David Terrell in the veil, wearing the black. And then when the white comes, it indicates the new. That which is out of the veil, the light of the end of the evening time. Is that right? And sure enough, David Terrell, he said, is starting to wear white. Said the vision said, when this happens, your ministry will start. Brother Delmer said that in the ministry he saw, there was one field of cotton that had been reaped down and just messed up, just picked here and there. But said God said to him, here's another field that's never been touched. It was beautiful. Bringing the church in. The revival is over to the world out there. It's over. It's gone. The doors is closing to the Gentile people, which is the bowels of compassion. It's closing up, and people that one time was an open door to the world, a child of God to them. The church world is now becoming just like the world. And it's just with them, they're just as world as anybody else. There's no light, there's no door, there's no nothing. Used to, the door stood open in the church. People was very religious, and you knew that was an open door to God. But now the church is closed up. In other words, they don't have any light, they don't have any spirit. They just got enough for themselves, the true ones. And the bowels of compassion is closed, the revival's gone. They're selling everything from shoestrings, I don't know what. It's over, and God's giving a move among the church. He's making a move among the church people. That's what he's doing. He's bringing the bride in, the rapture, the eagle going away, the independency coming in, the new government right here coming in to preview before the dark night to come in. Listen, folks, I'm going to say this right here and close out. The moon, the sun stands alone, the moon stands alone, and then when the last move comes, sun, father, moon, mother, stars, children, the last move comes, it's in many. It's in many. Just like Brother Branham said, or Brother Branham's followers, that is, it's in many. Once you get past Calvary, then no more lone individual, as they would say, moon or sun, but it's in many. Many stars measure. But there's one thing about it. Just before the many measures come, and that sun goes out, and that darkest part of the night is just before the dawn, there's one single morning star that lights the way toward the morning through that dark period until that light begins to shine and all of the measures can take place. And it's called His star. I've been out there in the night and I've seen it. And I know it's out there. I know that the millennium, or we say not the millennium, but we say Canaan is the morning star of David. And we say the millennium is the evening star of the son of David, which is the Christ. Jesus and the Christ. David and Solomon, I know that. There's a changeover. Whereas David represents, in his period of life, it represents the restoration of that which is taken away by the cankerworm that is restored earth. But when Solomon came, it represented the glorified earth of glorifying that which was restored. Or that is, if you preach a message, then there's a revelation to the message. There's the glorifying of what God has restored. And if He's restored them and brought them out of Egypt, God will glorify him. And this is the glorifying of it. Ooh, I feel good. Good, good. Don't you? Hallelujah. He's got to restore it. And then he glorifies it. That's what Brother Branham was doing. Was bringing it to a restoration. Trying to bring it in. So it could be fully restored. And if it's over to the world out yonder, then brother, what does that mean to us? The coming in of the Jew, what does it mean to you and I? It's got to mean life from the dead. You are considered dead, folks, because that body is dead with Christ or with Jesus, and you've never been able to come into it and really enjoy the benefits of your inheritance and get this heaviness off your mind and condemnation off of you and let go. But folks, we're living on the brinks. Did you know it? I said we're living on the brinks. We've done come to that thing, and the closing out is there, and as foolish as it seems, that little door to the vault out there is going to be a great significance in the mind of God. One little cement pillar sitting over here in Bethlehem, one of the great moves of God. A foolish and a base thing of the earth to confound the wise. I'll tell you what the king, queen of England, or king of England, or whatever they got in England and Germany, I'd be down here taking snapshots and pictures and trying to preserve it and everything else that they knew about it. It's no wonder they said that he'd come out here and be glad to get water out of one of these fountains. And he learned about the well Mizpah. There's a lot of things I'd like to say. You're just now getting to where you could preach to you now, just getting ready, you know. Getting the water's trouble. Getting to where you could really preach to you now. But I know that we're going to have to close out. I know that we are. I know you're tired. But I want you to stand up with me now. And I want you to think over these things. I only took time tonight to drop these in a little bit to where you can fit them together in your mind and ponder over these things and see whether or not I'm telling you the truth. We sing that song, Lord, I want to be in that number. I want to be in that number. You know, I drank that water. Somebody said, well, you drank the whole glass full. I drank the whole glass empty. I need it to be filled up again. But you know, I think about that water. Water. Folks, you ever stop to think about hell, fire, and brimstone? Have you? Can I say this right quick to you? All the way, and I just wish we had time to go in and break it down. Maybe sometime we will. But all the way from Babylon, that dark night set in of that 400 and something years. About 500 from Daniel, but about 445 from the building of the walls. 400 years that Abraham's seed sojourned in bondage follows the same thing all the way around. Every place you take it, it's still 400 years. Even the black man coming out, 400 years. It follows its type perfect. No prophets toward the last part because it's called the silent ages or the silent centuries. 100 years being a century, about 400 years. The silent centuries in there. No prophets, that is, no stars came up into the heavens. No prophets visited them. It was a dark night. We could really go back and bring this out, but I just want to drop a thought. And all through the dark age, it was a dark time. But there was the prophets that came, that is, the stars, one behind another, to break or to give a beginning or an angelic messenger referred to as stars or angels as stars. Martin, Columbia, Luther, different ones it's referred to. Coming to that dark night in every age, every season to break a light. God has moved it on down to our time, light in the evening time. And here we are in the evening time of God's light. And the translating power of God is here. It takes light to filter. He'll destroy him with the brightness of his coming. What will he destroy? The perverted image. Isn't that right? Come on now, folks. He said he'd destroy what? The perverted image. What is the perverted image? You're the perverted image. You say, but Brother Pike, we're sons and daughters of God. I'm not speaking of you being perverted in your spirit. But the outer man, it doth not yet appear what ye shall be like. The perverted image of the beast. The image that came from the intellectual mind. The first man, the first birth. Isn't that right? And you haven't had the change of the second man yet, which is to be wit in the redemption of the body. But I want you to see this, that we're on the verge of an eternal change. It's not far away. Now, with this change, the Bible said the brightness of that light, the brightness of his coming, that he would destroy the man of perdition. That's the outer man. It takes that inner light to change that perverted form to the original form in which he created it as Adam in the garden.
before he fell into darkness and took on the perversion. Because in its originality, you're made in God's image. And it was lost through the fall. And now we're coming back to it. And it takes that light to do it. That great light, that transformating light. They say one of the greatest robberies that was ever pulled was done by means of light. Light. It takes light to make that change. This great light has sprang up to us. This light. This transformating light that filters and changes. Your understanding enlightened. I wonder how many of you are really children of light. I wonder how many of you are doing like Moses when the light sprang out of his body. Like Brother Branham when it started shining as a halo around him. I wonder how many of you feel with this light that's going to change that outer man with its coming. From glory or light to light. From glory to glory, faith to faith, revelation to revelation, inspiration to inspiration. Folks, let me tell you, if you haven't come that far, you're in bad shape. Because we are now on the brinks of the change. And you that have mocked, and you that have not listened, and you that have overconfident yourself, and you that have done everything contrary, there's no need for you to holler and scream and beg and plead and say, I've changed my mind, because you played it. You played it. Folks won't listen. They just won't listen. No matter what, they won't listen. Like a deathbed repentance at the last minute, it's too late. It's too late. You can't live your life like the devil, gossip and backbite, and put God off every day and wait for a time to get right with God after you trouble everybody and tear down everything and go after the flesh like Esau and then run over at the last minute and say, I've changed my mind. It's too late to do that. God don't work like that. You people are fixing to come into the reality of serving God. Now you watch what I'm telling you. I'm going to close out. But you watch what I'm telling you. With the going up of this door to this little old unsightly thing out here to your eyes, there's going to be a great and a drastic change take place. I made a statement when I sat in at Washington up there to hear the conference that after that there'd be a great change in heaven and in earth. There has been one. I mean, there's been a change in politics. There's been a change in everything since that time. There's been a great turmoil in the earth. But folks, it's fixing to be something a whole lot worse than that. A whole lot greater than that. You better get a hold to whatever you can get a hold of. Because we're coming close to the brinks of eternity. A lot closer than you could ever imagine. Let's sing the song. We'll give the glory to Jesus for that end. And give me another key, just a little bit. And we'll give all the glory to Jesus. We'll sing about his love. We'll sing about his love. And we'll give all the glory to Jesus. And we'll sing of his wonderful love. Sing it again. Oh, we'll give all the glory to Jesus.